Over 20 years ago, I stood by the grave of my great uncle on the Somme in a cemetery called Bousincourt Communal Cemetery Extension. And I looked down at his headstone and saw my own family name on there. And it had a profound and lasting effect on me. It was one of those life-changing moments that certainly did change my life for the better. And it led me on a course that's ended up with me becoming a battlefield guide in my retirement, and also taken me down lots of other avenues, like becoming a volunteer for the Commonwealth War Graves Commission. But most importantly, it took me down a route of researching my great uncle's story and also my granddad's story, and their stories told in the first podcast I did, A Tale of Two Brothers, which you can find if you go back to the beginning of the series on wherever you get this podcast from. But I wanted there to be some kind of lasting legacy for my own uncle and granddad, and also for myself when I'm gone. And I thought that the best way of doing that would be to help others research their stories of their relatives, their World War I soldiers that went off and perhaps didn't come back. And there can be no doubt that I get a massive satisfaction out of taking people over to the battlefields of Flanders and the Somme and Ypres area. And this week was no exception. I've been on several battlefield tours recently, but for some reason this one really has struck a chord with me and the people I took. A few years ago they had an uncle Dennis that died, and in his belongings they found details of two of their great uncles that they didn't even know existed. They hadn't been spoken about after they died in World War One. They'd done a lot of the research themselves, and then they asked me, I think it was through Facebook actually, to put together a tour for them where they could not just go and see where their relatives died and where they're buried, but follow in their footsteps across the battlefields. And that's what we did. And I thought it would make a good podcast, because hopefully when you listen to the stories, you'll see that these were just two ordinary men coming from the northwest of England who gave up their careers, their jobs and their families back home and took themselves off to the battlefields and didn't come home. And not only were they brothers 10 years apart in age, but they died in exactly the same way. Not fighting the enemy, but trying to save comrades. And I think this is why it really has struck a chord with me this week and whilst I was out there. And I'd like to share their story with you this week with contributions from the family. So here we go, let's get cracking, and we'll start off by looking at actually what happened to these two soldiers, John and James Sunter. So we start by looking at who these men were. What were they doing in civilian life before the outbreak of World War One? And we can find them, the family, living at 16 Wilkinson Street in Nelson in Lancashire. The head of the family is George Sunter, who was 74, and his wife Hannah was nearly 20 years younger. And they'd been married at this stage for 35 years. The eldest son was John William Sunter. He was 28 years old and he was working as a labourer in a brewery. And then we go down the list and we find 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 other siblings. And we also find James Edward Sunter at 18 years old, 10 years younger than John. He's also single and he's working as a cotton weaver. And of course, coming from the northwest, these industrial towns north of Manchester, this was the main industry, the cotton factories. And a lot of those cotton factories have now either been pulled down or converted into apartments. And they all lived together in 5 rooms in this terrace house in Wilkinson Street, Nelson. No doubt those terrace houses were built for the workers in the cotton factories. And when you go on to Google Maps now, you can see that the street looks exactly the same as it would have done over 100 years ago. Except the fact, of course, there are lots of cars in the street now and you've got satellite dishes and all the other paraphernalia from the 21st century. But fundamentally, when you look down that street, it would have looked exactly the same way as it did when those two boys, John and James, packed up their stuff and went off to the station with their comrades, and off they went to the Western Front. Now, as most people know, the problem we have with researching soldiers from the First World War is that 60% of the records, their personal records, were destroyed during the Blitz when a German bomb hit the building in Kew that was holding all of the files. And those records that do survive are often damaged by fire or from the water as they use hose pipes to put out the fire. But we're lucky with John W. Sunter because his service record has survived in full. And when we look at it, it gives us a lot of information about this man. It says that when he joined up, it was September 1914, so he would have been one of the first volunteers. And he joined the Royal Army Medical Corps. At that stage, he was 31 years old. And as we said earlier, he'd been working as a labourer. But his attestation form also tells us that he'd served previously with the Royal Army Medical Corps. Personal description of him says that he was 5'8½". He had brown hair and grey eyes. And he was, in terms of religion, part of the Church of England, as most people were. As we look down what's called his casualty form, it tells us that he embarked from Southampton with his unit, the 46th Field Ambulance, on the 9th of July 1915, and the following day arrived in Le Havre. On the 4th of December 1916, he was promoted to Lance Corporal, and he served on the Western Front with the BEF for 2 years and 23 days, until his death on the 31st of July 1917. But it also tells us that he was awarded the Military Medal in June of 1917. And without an article that we found in the local newspaper, that's all we'll have known about him. But thankfully, the local Lancashire newspaper tells us a lot more. And it tells us that his mum had three sons that were serving. The third son, George, was serving with the Royal Field Artillery, and he came back, he survived the war. But the article about John tells us so much more about him, and it also tells us exactly how he died. And I'll read the article here. It says, two or three soldier sons killed, a military medalist and former local footballer. The painful shock of hearing of the death of two of her three soldier sons this week has been the experience of Mrs. Sunter of 16 Wilkinson Street in Nelson. Last September, Private James Edward Sunter from the 2nd 5th Lancashire Fusiliers was posted missing, and on Thursday his mother was officially notified that he is presumed dead. His widow resides at number 10 Bank Street. And then on Wednesday, so this is in the same week that the mum finds out that young James has been killed on the Somme, she finds out that the oldest son, John, has also been killed. It says, on Wednesday, unofficial news was received that Lance Corporal John William Sunter of the RAMC was killed on the 31st of July. A comrade, writing to his mother on the 4th, stated that Lance Corporal Sunter was killed instantly when bringing in the wounded. The writer adds, if ever a man gave his life to save others, Jack did. He was called Jack. So many men in those days that were christened John were called Jack. He says, and I can assure you we have lost one who can never be replaced. He was more than a chum to me. And we then go on to find a little bit more about John's award of the Military Medal. And it says, for his gallantry at Vimy Ridge last April, when he was wearing the ribbons of his decoration at the time he met his death, and they'd been sent to the family by a comrade. The deceased soldier, who was 34 years of age, served with the Royal Army Medical Corps in the South African War. He was 12 years with the colours and the reserve, and he enlisted on the outbreak of the war. 4 or 5 years ago, he was a member of the Nelson football team, and he formerly worked at Messrs. Astley's Brewery. So for a researcher like me, there was a lot of valuable information in there. It tells us, of course, the circumstances of his death. It confirms the date he was killed on, the 31st of July 1917. And of course, that's a famous date in the history of World War I, because that's the first day of the Third Battle of Ypres, what we call Passchendaele. We know that he was serving with the 46th Field Ambulance, so we can track down and we can see exactly where they were on that first day of that battle. And it also tells us that while serving with the same Field Ambulance, that he'd been awarded the Military Medal for his work, it said at Vimy Ridge in April of 1917, but that can't have been right. Unless he was serving with the Canadians, it was the Canadians that were at Vimy. But of course, at the beginning of April, on that day, the 9th of April, the battle was much further afield than just Vimy Ridge. It was the first day of the Battle of Arras. And that told me that where he served was probably in that area, but probably not at Vimy Ridge. And that was something that we needed to explore. So what about the other brother, James? He's mentioned in that article as having been killed in the previous year during the Battle of the Somme. And a quick check of the Commonwealth War Graves Commission records soon proved that this was the case, because we find that we got a Private James Edward Sunter, service number 204053, and he was serving with the 2nd 5th Battalion of the Lancashire Fusiliers, and he's died on the 9th of September 1916. Unfortunately, he has no known grave. He's remembered on the Teepvale Memorial to the Missing. Now, the other problem that we've got with James is that his record is one of those that's lost, so we've got very limited information about him, but we do have a marriage certificate, and it shows that in February 1913, he married Minnie Nutter. They were both 20 years old at the time. He was a labourer and she was working as a weaver. And his medal index card shows that he was awarded the British Victory Medal and the British Medal, but not the 1914-15 star. And that therefore tells us that he served on the Western Front after the 1st of January 1916, which would have been for 9 months then, or 8 months, just over 8 months before he was killed in the September. And once again, the local newspaper comes up trumps. It tells us exactly what happened to him. It says, reported fate of a Nelson soldier. As stated in our issue of Wednesday, word was received on Saturday from an unofficial source that Private James Edward Sunter of the 2nd 5th Lancashire Fusiliers, whose wife resides at No. 10 Bank Street, had been killed in action. His brother, Bombardier George Sunter of the Royal Field Artillery, stated in a letter home that he'd been making inquiries about James, who was reported to have been wounded on September the 9th. George says in that letter, "As I knew his unit had come my way, I was granted a pass by my officer and I found out all about my poor brother. I was speaking to some of his comrades who saw him buried. He was killed at," and then the word has been deleted by the censor, but we now know it's Ginchy. "James had been over the top with his machine gun section and had returned safely, helping to carry in a wounded man. It seems they got into a shell hole to sleep that night, and as they were coming out of action the following morning, but a shell came over and killed him. This is what his own chums have told me. A few days before, James had been trying to find me out here." Private Sunter, who was one of three brothers serving, was 24 years of age. He enlisted in the East Lancashire Regiment before being transferred to the Lancashire Fusiliers. And before joining up last March, he was employed at Astley's Brewery in Nelson, and he was well known in the town. What an awful experience that must have been for his brother, discovering when he went to find him that he'd been killed in such awful circumstances. Now, the first thing that occurred to me, like I said at the beginning of the podcast, that here we have two brothers, 10 years apart in age, in two different units, in two different battles, in two different parts of the battlefield. One is a medical man, of course, and the other man is taking part in a major attack on the Somme near Delville Wood. But both of them have died trying to save a comrade, bringing comrades back from the battlefields and killed by a shell as they're doing so, but in different circumstances. And when we headed out to the battlefields, we found out exactly what those circumstances were. So let's go in chronological order then. Let's look at what happened to James during the Battle of the Somme in the summer and early autumn of 1916. And we know he's serving with the 2nd 5th Lancashire Fusiliers, and they took part a month before he died in one of those awful attacks. The formidable fortress that was made up of the ruins of the village of Gullimont, and also the railway station and the quarry that the Germans had turned into massive defensive emplacements. And it looked out across no man's land towards Trones Wood, on a wide expanse of no man's land that several units of British had tried in vain to get across and to force the Germans out of Gullimont. Now, the village of Gullimont was eventually cleared on the 3rd of September 1916, but the date we're looking at is the 8th and 9th of August, and the 2nd 5th Lancashire Fusiliers are in trenches just southwest of Trones Wood, a wood that's still there to this day, and they were preparing to attack the German lines, but such was the confusion, they were given different orders and times that they were to go over the top, and in the end, they couldn't do it. They couldn't do it because they sat there in those trenches for 2 days and two nights. The men were in a desperate state. They hadn't had any fresh food. They hadn't been able to sleep. The whole area was infested with a haze of fat flies and blue bottles. And the maggots were gnawing away at the wounds of the wounded men that were lying around. Of course, this is high summer. And it was absolutely impossible to make the attack. And eventually, they were relieved without even going over the top. Another report said that there were bodies all over the place. This is from previous attacks. Bloated bodies. They hadn't been able to clear them away. Now, I parked up the car and everybody, there was five of them with us from the same family, the Sunter family. As they got out the car, I was reading my notes that I've just read to you and explaining what happened here when someone noticed in a drainage ditch that ran under the road between Troneswood and Gullymont what looked like a boot. And indeed, it was part of a soldier's boot, no doubt a British soldier's boot. We could see the studs in the sole of the boot. There was only half a boot there, and it was laying upside down in the mud in this drainage ditch. When we looked at it closely, we could see that the other half of the boot was missing, and then it occurred to us that the soldier whose boot it was may well be buried beneath the surface that we were looking. So we carefully replaced the boot, and we moved on. But for the rest of the day, we couldn't help thinking about that young man, what had happened to him, the owner of that boot. We'll never know, of course. But it's a tragic reminder of what happened all across the Somme battlefield in that summer and autumn of 1916. So then we moved just a few hundred yards north of Troneswood, and we found ourselves in a field to the east of Delville Wood. And this was the place where just a month later, on the 9th of September 1916, the same battalion were to go into action to try and take the village of Ginchy. And they attacked from trenches which were just 200 or 300 yards away from the German lines. But it was to be here that young James was to lose his life. Now, an invaluable source to people like myself that visit the battlefields and tell the stories of these men is a digital device called Linesman. And it's a series of, I think there's hundreds of preloaded trench maps on this Android device that I carry around. But what makes it really useful is a GPS signal. And this is sold by a company called Great War Digital. And it really does help us because you can use the GPS signal to walk the battlefields. And as you do so, you can see with the GPS signal sitting on top of the trenches that you're in exactly the right place. And that's what we did. We started our walk. We parked up at Delville Wood and we started walking along that quiet lane. The field on the left where they attacked from had been ploughed and there were no crops in there. So the family were able to stand on the edge of that field and consider what happened to James on that autumn day. In this case, by referring to the battalion diary, it gives us very little information about what happened there. It tells us that they were due to attack from two trenches, Stout Trench and Pilsen Trench, all the trenches in this area named after drinks. But the battalion diary goes on to say that the attack was held up and it was delayed because as the men were being heavily shelled and machine gunned as they went over the top, they veered off to the left instead of going straight ahead and round Ginchy, and they mistook a British trench called Haymarket for Hop Halley and they halted there. They actually got stuck. It says that the trench only consisted of a series of shell holes in which the remnants of the battalion collected, having been unable to advance owing to heavy machine gun fire. It simply then goes on to list the wounded and the killed, because it says the battalion just withdrew to Pilsen Trench where they started from and consolidated, and the units were reorganised. And it lists the names of the officers that were casualties that day, and then at the bottom, handwritten, it says 334 other ranks killed, wounded and missing. And of course, as we know, our James was one of those that was missing, although it had been reported that he was wounded. And we know, of course, from the newspaper article what happened, that he was killed, he was buried, someone seen him buried. But now, of course, because of what happened afterwards and the subsequent fighting, he has no known grave. Now, there's an author that most people will know. He does a superb podcast himself called Peter Hart, and he wrote a book called The Somme. And by referring to that book, we've got the account of a second lieutenant, Georgian, and this was his first experience in battle. And he wrote what he saw on that day. He says, when the battle started, it was all very horrifying. Shells shooting over the trench and knocking the sand off the parapet. The troops went forward and they very soon came back. They were really knocked to bits by the Germans. I did not take part in the actual movement because it wasn't my business to do so. The whole thing developed in some glorious muddle and there wasn't anything very coherent sent back. He's talking about messages, he was a signaller. Then there's a driver, James Reynolds, and he was with the Royal Engineers, but attached to the same division that the Lancashire Fusiliers were with, that James was with. And he said, "We had to go up to the top of a little rise. Strewn up the hill in rows like corn that had been mown lay hundreds of our chaps that looked as though they'd run into a machine gun nest. It was a warm, muggy day, and the poor chaps' faces and exposed flesh were smothered in flies. The smell was awful. They lay so thick that we simply could not avoid running over some of them. The horses, of course, stepped over, as a horse, unless absolutely forced to, will not tread on a prone body. But we could not help the wheels going over a few." The ironic thing is that just after I read that account, one of the members of James' family found a horseshoe. Another soldier wrote, "Our shells bursting in the village of Ginchy made it belch forth smoke like a volcano. We couldn't run. We advanced at a steady walking pace, stumbling here and there, but going ever onward and upward. A shell landed in the midst of a bunch of men about 70 yards away on my right. I have a most vivid recollection of seeing a tremendous burst of clay and earth go shooting up into the air. Yes, and even parts of human bodies, and that when the smoke cleared away, there was nothing left." Awful, really, but very emotional to stand there and read those accounts to the family on the very spot where their great uncle advanced into the mist of Ginchy in amongst all that machine gun fire and shells all those years ago. And there they were standing there, and as they wandered round that field, they found bits of shrapnel. They found a shrapnel ball. We found a Lee Enfield bullet that was still in its cartridge, which meant, of course, it hadn't been fired. And then, of course, they wanted to know what had happened to him. Where would his body? They know he'd been buried, but of course, his body had then been lost. And behind us in Delville Wood Cemetery, this, of course, was the most likely place of burial for James. The Commonwealth War Graves Commission website tells us that 91 men from his battalion died that day, and 63 of them have no known grave, and like James, they're remembered at Teepvale Memorial. But 25 of them that were buried and still have a known grave are buried in this Delville Wood Cemetery, which is literally about 500 yards away from where they fell. And by walking in amongst the graves of the known, we were able to find in plot 16 three soldiers, Moran, Lithgow and Dalton, that died on that day. And in amongst them, there were two missing soldiers that we know were Lancashire Fusiliers because their battalion, their regiment, had been identified, but they were unknown. And this, of course, as I explained to the family, was the closest they were going to get. And they stood there and pictured themselves behind these two graves, knowing that there is a chance, just a slim chance, that perhaps one of those men is James, who fell close to there 107 years ago. Then, of course, to finish his story, we made our way to the Teepvale Memorial, the memorial that looks across the battlefields and records the names of 72,000 missing that have no known grave. And there we found at the top of Pier 3, James's name in amongst all those missing. And it completed the story of what had happened to him. The family were even more pleased because there is a chance, just a chance, that we'd found his final resting place in Delville Wood Cemetery. So then we turned our attentions to the older brother, John. And as we know, if you remember from the newspaper report, that it was said that he was awarded his military medal for actions at Vimy Ridge in April. But when we looked at the Field Ambulance War Diary, we find, as I suspected, that they weren't actually at Vimy Ridge. They were in a place called Fuchi on the round and about the 9th of April 1917, when the battle began. And when we looked at the battalion diary, it tells us that the 46th Field Ambulance were treating cases in the Bastion, which is the citadel in Arras, close by. And as the battle moved forward on the 9th of April, as they moved the Germans back, the Field Ambulance moved to a place called Fuchi. And in Fuchi today, there are two cemeteries. One's on the main road, but one's actually in the village itself. And there are just 200 casualties in this cemetery. And this, of course, is the most likely location for the Field Ambulance in the second week of April 1917. And this is probably where John had been awarded, where he'd carried out the action, where he'd been awarded the military medal. Their war diary tells us that during those few days, stretcher bearers were doing relay bearing between the 45th Field Ambulance in Fuchi and the oil factory a couple of miles back in Arras itself. It also tells us that the weather conditions were awful. There was a heavy fall of snow and it made the roads bad and the work of the bearers very heavy. It wasn't just John that was awarded the military medal, because on May the 1st, their war diary tells us that there were 6 soldiers that were awarded the military medal, including John. So the story then moves on to the 31st of July 1917. They've moved from Arras up to the Ypres salient and ready for the first day of the battle, the third battle of Ypres, which of course, as we said earlier, we call Passchendaele. And by using the field ambulance diary, we went to the very place at Poitiers, I think it's pronounced. I'm hopeless at this, but I think it's called Poitiers. And it's just a couple of miles from Ypres, on the east side of Ypres. And this is where the field ambulance was based. There are 3 cemeteries there now. There was once a chateau there. And that's where they were as the front line moved forward on that first day, which it did. It moved the Germans off the first ridge. And out into no man's land goes John and also another soldier called Shaw. They're acting as stretcher bearers. But we know, of course, that he's killed by a shell as they're trying to bring wounded back to the advanced dressing station, or the dressing station that was there. And that's where we went. The family told us what it felt like to be there on the place where John had died. So where I am now is in one of the 3 burial grounds, the 3 Commonwealth War Graves Commission cemeteries, just about 2 miles to the east of Ypres, where the front line was at the first day of the third Battle of Ypres, Battle of Passchendaele. And I think it's pronounced Poitiers, but I can't pronounce it very well. But those of you that have been here will know exactly where I mean. There's 3 burial grounds here, and I'm with the family of a man that was in the Royal Army Medical Corps, John W. Sumter. And here on that first day, the Battle of Passchendaele, 31st of July 1917, he's gone out into no man's land from where we are at the moment. Where we are standing was an advanced dressing station. And as the battle has started, as it's moved on up the ridge in front of us, he's gone out with his stretcher with another man who was later found in the same location, the same burial plot. And that was the end of it. He was hit by a shell and he was killed that day whilst trying to bring in wounded comrades. As I say, I'm here with 5 members of his family, and he was your great uncle, I understand, Pauline.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And how did you get to find out about him in the first place? How did you even know he existed?
We found some information from my uncle's house after my uncle died, and we found some medals,
yep,
and some letters, etc. And I just wanted to know who this person was. So from that point then, I went on to Ancestry and had a look and found out who he actually was, and it turned out he was our great uncle.
And he's
one
not
of 2 great uncles.
One of 2 great uncles, because the other one, James, is buried, or he's remembered on the Somme, and we're going to visit there in a couple of days' time. But thinking about John, what do we know about him? Was he a married man with a family?
I believe he wasn't married.
He came from a big family, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
And where did he live?
He lived in Nelson.
In Nelson, in Lancashire,
he was originally from Emsey in Skipton. They were actually from Yorkshire, originally.
And from your point of view, this isn't the first time you've been on the trail of John Sumter, because I understand you came here with your partner in 2014 and you visited his grave, where we're going to go next.
Mm.
But you haven't actually been here. This is the place, this is the very location where he sat out with his stretcher on that day. It's the first time you've actually been here. We've proved that we're in the right place because we've looked at the unit diary, we've looked at Google Maps, and we've looked at the linesman device. You are standing on the very spot where he started off that day, and where his life was ended. How does that make you feel? Is it possible to put it into words?
It's quite emotional, really, because it's just amazing to think that we are stood virtually on the spot, overlooking the battlefield, 107 years later, I think it is, when it all happened, and here we are.
And we know from the Commonwealth War Graves Commission burial records that him and another man called Shaw, J.W. Shaw, therefore that tells us that these 2 men were probably carrying a stretcher together. He was also killed that day, and the burial records show us that the 2 men were buried in a plot not far from where we're standing, so not far from where he died. And then in February 1919, like so many others, the Imperial War Graves Commission, as it was then,
have found their isolated graves. On the wooden cross, someone had painted on both graves the RAMC, Royal Army Medical Corps cap badge. It's got their names on there, and that's how they've identified that those two soldiers are there. Their graves haven't been lost because the battle moved on from here on that day. Very fortunate that those graves were saved, were not destroyed, and that's why they've now got permanent graves not far away in the Eatown Cemetery. But you've been there before, haven't you?
Yes, I have got several artifacts of John's.
What have you got?
We've got his three medals. I can't remember.
He's got the 1914-15 star, yeah, because he came out to the Western Front in 1915, July 1915, mm-hmm, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. And then he's got the two service medals, the British War Medal and the British Victory Medal. So yeah, you've got all three of those.
Got those
and
three.
You found those in your uncle's belongings?
Yeah, yeah, his Royal Army Medical Corps cap badge, and there's some buttons there, probably off his uniform.
Right. We've got a list of personal belongings in the
fob
file.
Fob watch and things.
Got,
yeah,
his watch.
Yeah, he's got a fob watch with his name engraved in it.
Yeah.
And letters. And it's just nice to be able to come here and piece together everything about him.
It squares the circle, really.
It does. It brings the jigsaw together,
yeah,
basically.
This
coming
is something
here,
you've been studying for a,
yeah,
long time.
Yeah, it? Yeah. It just pieces everything together, and it's just, it's amazing just to.
You've also showed me, I'll say after this, we're going to go to his grave in Eatown Cemetery Extension. And you showed me a remarkable photograph, but looking at the clothes that the people are wearing, it shows his mum and dad, does it, and a sister standing by his grave?
Yeah, yeah.
We think that must be dated in the 1920s, I would suggest.
Possibly.
And we're going to try and line that up later by standing at his grave now. And then looking at, if there's only one building in the distance behind them, and Ypres, as we know, was rising from the ashes in the 1920s, so it would be interesting to see how that matches up then against now, and it will enable,
absolutely,
us to work out when. So we know that you're not the first relative to visit his grave, because is that mum, dad and sister then, in that photo?
I think that's his brother.
Yeah.
And his wife's two sisters. I think his wife was actually taking the photo at,
right,
the time. That's
right.
Why she's not on the photo.
Not on the
but
photo,
I think
no.
She was taking the photo. She would, yeah, have been there, no doubt.
Well, upload that photograph onto the podcast webpage on my website, terrystours.co.uk. And then when we take a photo of that later, we'll have a then and now shot. That'd be interesting to see.
So what happened was then we travelled the 2 miles or so into Ypres. We found the Ypres Town Cemetery. And of course, as soon as we went through the gates, they were armed with a British Legion poppy wreath, and Pauline and her partner knew exactly where he was buried. As you go in through the gate on the left-hand side beneath a tree, there is John's grave, and we held a short ceremony there. We played the last post, and we paused for a few moments to remember that young man, that relative. Very emotional moment. It always is, of course, especially having just been to where he actually died. And then we lined up those two photos and we could see in the distance the few buildings that were in Ypres. We could see across from the civilian cemetery just the other side of the wall. And we realised that we were in exactly the same place that those pilgrims had stood all those years ago in the 1920s. A very emotional moment for the family. And then they said a little bit more to express their feelings and what it meant to them. So we've now come to the Ypres Town Extension Cemetery, which means it's a civilian cemetery not far from the Menin Gate, only a 10-minute stroll from the Groat Market. And within this cemetery, there's a hedge, a small hedge, and then a higher hedge, and some trees that have been pollarded, but they're growing back and they've got vegetation on them again. And we're standing by the grave of John. He was known as Jack Sunter, Military Medal, Royal Army Medical Corps, killed on the 31st of July 1917, aged 34. The personal inscription is, could you just move the wreath briefly, just so I can read out, thank you. His personal inscription, which would have been chosen by his mum, says, a loving son and brother, true and kind, and a sweet memory left behind. And of course, the added tragedy for the family is that his younger brother, James, was killed at Ginchy on the Somme in the previous year. So his mum has lost two of her sons. And next to John or Jack is J.W. Shaw, also the Royal Army Medical Corps. And he was aged just 22 and died on the same day. And we know that they were together because their graves were found together. And on the wooden cross that was marking their graves, someone had painted
the regimental badge of the Royal Army Medical Corps. So I'm here now with five members of Jack's family, and for some of them it's the first time that they've been to his grave, and obviously not just going to his grave, we've been to the place where he died today. One of his, you're his great nephew, I think, aren't you? You're his great nephew. So if you'd like to introduce yourself, first of all.
My name's Clifford Sunter, yep. And my grandfather is J.W. Sunter's brother.
Brother, yeah.
That's right, isn't it? Yeah.
And how did you come to find out about this story then? You've not been here before, have you?
No. Well, for me, the first time I heard of J.W. Sunter was on the back of a watch that belonged to my granddad.
Yeah.
Because he had some names on it, and we didn't even know he existed before then.
Right.
And I thought, oh, who's this? And then we found a photo showing a grave. I thought, wow, what amazing. So I thought we'd like to come and see this grave, so eventually.
Because what we have done, we just looked at a photo that was taken here probably in the 1920s or 1930s, and we can see in the background one of the houses that's here now and was there when Eat was rebuilt in the 1920s, and we can see in the old photo the spire of St Martin's Cathedral. And then there's some modern flats, which, of course, are in the photo we've taken today, but weren't here in the 1920s. And we look back at that photo, and that's your grandfather in that photo, isn't
it? Grandad Thomas.
Grandad Thomas. And this is his brother. He's come to see his brother's grave, hasn't he?
Mm.
So what does it mean to you, this today? What has it meant to you coming all this way? We left England early this morning, and we've been wandering around Ypres and the battlefields today. What has it meant to you?
Well, it's like a connection. Obviously, it's a long way. You think, oh, yeah, it's buried over there somewhere in Belgium.
Mm.
But to come here and see it, I think, wow, it really brings it to man more.
And it's got your family name on the grave.
Yeah, it's dear to see his name.
And the tragedy is that we mentioned that his younger brother was killed on the Somme in the previous year, and he has no known grave.
No,
he's remembered on the Tietvale Memorial, and that's a story that we're going to be following over the next couple of days. So well maintained by the Commonwealth War Graves Commission.
Yeah, it is.
Beautiful cemetery.
Yeah, surrounded well looked by after.
Flowers that are now coming into bloom as we go into late spring, early summer.
Mm.
Anybody else want to say anything? What's your name?
Stephen Sunter.
Yep.
Great nephew of J.W. Sunter.
Yeah.
I think it's wonderful that they do a remembrance every single night in the city centre. I think it's amazing.
Which we're going to go and see tonight, the last post ceremony.
Every day since the war. It's incredible.
And when you stand there tonight, you're only going to be, 500 yards away from where he's buried?
Yeah.
So when we go to that ceremony in a couple of hours' time, you'll be able to stand there. Yes, think about all the soldiers that are missing that are on the memorial, but just, you know, 10 minutes walk away is your great uncle.
It's amazing. Very moving.
We're lucky that we have a gravestone for John.
We haven't got one for James.
No, and there's a lot of soldiers who fought for this country don't have a gravestone, do they?
And, of course, therefore, you know, the families can come and look at a name on a memorial.
Yeah, yeah.
And Plumer, General Plumer, said when he unveiled the Meningates, he said that they are not missing, they are here, which they are.
Yeah.
But it's nice to have that closure of come and see.
It's nice to have that connection.
Yeah.
That you can see the gravestone and you feel a connection to that relative.
And his mum has chosen those words with so much love, hasn't she?
Yeah,
and pride, I think. I can see pride in those words.
Yeah.
The birds are singing, aren't they, in the tree. We're directly below a tree and we can hear the birds, probably pick it up on the microphone, singing away. Perhaps they're singing to him.
Yeah.
Nice
thought. Mm. You know, like last time we did the thing in Leyland, where I come from, the cenotaph.
Yeah.
Since I've known about, I thought about them more because I didn't know they existed before. But now I think about them.
Are their names on there?
No, not because I live in Leyland, but they're in Nelson, aren't they? On the Nelson one.
Yeah.
I'm from Nelson, really, but I live in Leyland now.
Yeah.
But now I can see it.
And every time you go there, you're going to think back to this moment, aren't you?
I am, definitely.
And that's the feeling that I had 22 years ago. When I first saw my great uncle's grave, exactly the same relationship to you. When I saw his grave, I had the same feelings. And it is, I'm sure you agree, a life-changing moment, isn't it? Not just for us, but for everybody else that listens to this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Many people have been through it, and hopefully by listening to this story, it's going to inspire other people, not just to look on Ancestry and find my past, but to actually come out here, whether they come with a coach party on a private tour, and find these soldiers, because they're waiting to be found, aren't they?
Yeah.
And you knew exactly where his grave was when you came in, didn't you?
Yeah.
It's as though he's drawing you in.
So that was it, really. They're, you know, it's a family that before we went on this tour, I'd never met before. I didn't know anything about them. And within a few days of being with them on the battlefields, we'd established this tremendous bond, and it's a tour that, of course, I'll never forget. And the purpose of the tour and to do this podcast is to make sure that John, or Jack as he was called, and James Sunter, their memories are never forgotten. For they were forgotten for many, many years until Pauline found those letters and the watch and the other belongings in a box left behind by her uncle when he died. And we'll now ensure that we tell their story whenever we go to Ypres and to the Somme, and they'll always be remembered. And I do hope that listening to this, it will inspire you to go out to the battlefields and do exactly the same thing. So at the end of the tour, we held a small ceremony to remember the two boys from Nelson.
So as I mentioned, what I'd like to do on our last few moments on the battlefields, best weather we've had, is to play not just the last post, but there was a ceremony that was held on the 1st of July 1916 at Tietvale, where we were yesterday. And it was the 100th anniversary of the start of the Battle of the Somme. 10,000 people, including myself, were fortunate to win tickets, free tickets, in a ballot. And we all gathered there, and there was this, well, I think it was about an hour and a half the ceremony went on for. But the bit that sticks out for me most of all in that ceremony was the actor Charles Dance, the famous actor Charles Dance. And he stood just by the Stone of Remembrance there on the steps at Tietvale, and he read the famous poem by Siegfried Sassoon called Aftermath. And it stuck with me, 7 years now since then. And I always like to play that because it brings together all the emotions and thoughts that we've had over the last 3 or 4 days as we followed in the footsteps of Jack, John, as his official name was, Sunter, and Private James Sunter, who died in Delville Wood, and we followed in his footsteps yesterday. So during this, you've had lots of different emotions and thoughts. And I think the words of this poem bring all those thoughts together. And then after that, we'll play the last post. And then we can just have a few moments silence whilst we listen to the birds. And you tell me they're skylarks, is that right? Skylarks. And then that will be the end of our tour.
Have you forgotten yet? For the world's events have rumbled on since those gagged days. Like traffic checked while at the crossing of city ways. And the haunted gap in your mind has filled with thoughts that flow like clouds in the knit heaven of life. And you're a man reprieved to go, taking your peaceful share of time with joy to spare. But the past is just the same, and war's a bloody game. Have you forgotten yet? Look down and swear by the slain of the war that you'll never forget. Do you remember the dark months you held the sector at Mametz? The nights you watched and wired and dug and pulled sandbags on parapets? Do you remember the rats and the stench of corpses rotting in front of the frontline trench? And dawn coming, dirty white and chill with a hopeless rain? Do you ever stop and ask, is it all going to happen again? Do you remember that hour of din before the attack? And the anger, the blind compassion that seized and shook you then, as you peered at the doomed and haggard faces of your men? Do you remember the stretcher cases lurching back with dying eyes and lolling heads? Those ashen grey masks of the lads who once were keen and kind and gay. Have you forgotten yet? Look up and swear by the green of the spring that you will never forget.
It's a beautiful poem, isn't it? And there was some things that he said there that stuck in my mind. You know, is it all going to happen again? And of course, it did all happen again. And he also says, you know, please never forget. In his own words, he's saying that. And I think by making the effort to come out here. And Pauline, you've done a lot of work researching these two soldiers, and all that work has come to conclusion on this trip, hasn't it, over the last few days. And by doing that, we're not forgetting, and we won't forget, and we'll go back and you'll tell the rest of your family members about it, the next generation, and we'll write up the files and you'll put them in the family archive. And then hopefully in years to come, when we're all gone, you know, the next generation, your grandchildren and their grandchildren, will come out here and stand where we've stood and tell the same stories. Using the documents, this podcast, they'll be able to come and listen, read the same stories that we've done over the last few days. Because these cemeteries that we're looking at, it says in every single cemetery that these are here in perpetuity. These are here forever. The headstones are going to be permanent. Yes, they're going to deteriorate. Of course they will deteriorate. But they're going to be here. They're going to be here forever. And as long as we keep coming, then the memories of those men that died, and they didn't die in glory. There's nothing glorified about war, is there? They died in terrible circumstances. Both of your relatives have died not fighting. They've been saving other men. You know, that's the common link between them, I think. And, you know, their values have passed down to you, haven't they? And we've shared those values on this trip. So thank you very much for coming with me. It's been a real pleasure, and I'm very grateful. And you know, I'll forever tell their stories every time I come to Ypres and to the Somme.
So there we go. That's the story of two ordinary boys, as we said at the beginning of the podcast. That's no different to other people's stories. But I hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, and I'm very grateful for you tuning in and listening to their story. And I'm also very grateful to the many messages I've had recently from people that have listened to the podcast and have left reviews on Apple and Spotify. Really does help. And next week, it will be the anniversary of the Battle of Messines, the 7th of June, 1917. So we've got a very special guest coming on the podcast, a historian called Simon Jones. And Simon has written several books about the Great War. He's an expert on tunnelling, and he explains to us what really happened with those 19 mines that were blown beneath the German lines at Messines. And he talks about some of the myths that are built up over the years. But that's for next week. Thanks again for tuning in. And we remember those two boys, John, Jack, as he was called, and James Sunter. And we remember them and all the other soldiers that fell by playing The Last Post.